So I'm just curious, what did you think when you heard a business show wanted to talk to you?
They got to have the wrong group.
Yeah, wrong number.
Why?
We're artists.
Yeah, we're artists. I mean, we do business, but we've said it before. We're not primarily a thinking operation. We just kind of do things that we want to do, and then we figure it out afterwards.
Yeah. When we got Fast Company, it was kind of the same feeling. Like, there's no grand master evil plan that we had set up that we knew we'd take over the world by giving an album for free. It just felt like the right thing to do as an artist and as former kids who just loved rap music in this new environment. It just felt right, so... And I've never been good at posing as a businessman like a lot of rappers do. I'm an artist. I think L is an artist. He's been actually a great businessman, but Run the Jewels operation is an operation ran by the heart more so than the mind.
You just called yourself a former kid, and I'm curious, since you guys are...
I noticed that,
yeah,
too.
Well, so you guys are about my age. You both had success when you were younger, and then you wrestled with not having it. I'm curious how you think about money now and whether that's changed.
Interesting thought. I think that, at least for me, I would say that that's sort of the way it was, but not really. I mean, you have to think, we've actually been having our careers this entire time. It's not like we went and worked at UPS. We've been doing what we've been doing. It's just that, and making money at it, and this has been our jobs since we came into this business. I think of money the same way that everyone thinks of money. I like to be as free as possible in this world. And if the game is that you have to collect a bunch of green pieces of paper in order to be able to be autonomous and not have to deal with people you don't want to deal with, I'm going to go get that. But I'm not going to change myself or the thing that I love or the thing that has been there for my whole life, which is the love of music. I'm not going to change what that is and what the intention is. So I've always had the perspective that you want to try and bring money to the thing that you love and not try and take the thing that you love and change it so that it fits with what makes money. I love making money, but I just think at this point, both Mike and I agree that we're not going to do it unless we feel right about it, or unless the surrounding circumstances are that we're happy.
Mike, what about you?
I used to think money made me happy. And then I got a lot of it, and I lost a lot of it, and I was still happy. So I realized that it wasn't money that was making me happy. I was already happy. Money is a tool to be used. And it's used to take care of my wife and children. It's used to invest in my retirement. It's used for me to open and run business. And I've learned the art of money. Now, I'm happier with security, knowing that I have a good savings now, knowing that my wife and I are making intelligent decisions with our money. But I was already happy, and I've better learned to use the tool that is money now to keep me free of business deals that I don't want to be in, to keep me free from the stress and strain of bill pay, and to provide a better life for my children and my wife. So money is just simply a tool, and I'm glad that I've mastered some aspects of using that tool. And what isn't, and I'm not being foolish or wasteful like I was when I was younger.
Yeah. Ooh, boy.
Yeah. You think about the money you went through.
So let's just take a moment to let's take a moment of silent reverence for the money blown in our 20s.
Yeah.
What did you blow it on?
Me? Drugs, strippers, whatever I wanted I wasn't a man of deep vision.
Yeah, when you're 20 years old, you waste it on what all 20 years old. Everything you think you want, everything from stuff you order online. I'm from Atlanta, the capital of strip clubs, so I put a considerable amount of women through college, I'm sure.
An apartment that's too expensive.
That aren't worth the next year what you pay for. Just all the stupid stuff. When you grow up working class or poor, you have a fantasy of buying stuff. And when you first get money, you indulge that fantasy, and you can overindulge.
Right. Because you can't actually see anything bigger to...
Yeah.
There's no bigger picture. It's like, wait a second. Last week, I had no money, and now I have $5,000.
I needed this pink fur coat.
I'd probably be fine with $1,000. Let's just take that $4,000 and make a couple memories, fellas.
Well, wait a minute. I want to ask you guys, though, about the business now, because you've both been in the business for a while, and artists get compensated very differently now than, when you were in your 20s. So where does the revenue come from? Where are you making money from? You put your music on the internet for free.
We do. And we also put it on iTunes, and we also put it on every streaming service, which we have direct dealings with because we're not signed to the major labels.
And we tour very hard.
And we tour very hard.
250 days a year.
We've sold almost 100,000 copies of our album.
We sell a lot of t-shirts.
Physical. And t-shirts and, you know, and that's with giving the record away for free. The idea for giving the record away for free was an acknowledgement of the reality of the industry and also a strategic manipulation of it, you know. We make money off of everything. Record sales. We make money off of streaming.
Merchandise.
Merchandise is huge. We make money off of shows. It's huge. We make money off of licensing. We make money off of, you know, we've turned this into a real, job for us that is lucrative by literally letting go of some of the old sort of fashioned ideas of what the industry is. I think it was really just a recognition of the fact that all bets are off to a degree, and goodwill and connection with the people who would be supporting you is the most important currency to have, because at the very least, they're going to allow us to do this thing that we love, and that's what drives our lives. You know.
Let me ask you: you guys are both pretty politically outspoken and pretty politically active. What do you think about...
I am.
Yeah, you are.
But I'm not.
No, I'm not saying politically. Political activism
I am. L's a fool.
Nah, not that. I think we're socially outspoken.
Socially.
I think
okay.
From a political standpoint, L is not as... His hat's not in the arena like mine. Like, I am actually vote every year. I actually care about candidates and not so much with my friend. That's not a bad thing, but...
Well, but you guys also... Mike, you spoke after Ferguson. You wrote this op-ed. What do you think about watching the Confederate flag come down?
I mean, I'm happy. Again, that's more of a social issue for me. I think the flag coming down is a good thing. Not that I have a problem with the flag for people who see it as a part of their heritage. Their family members may have served in the Confederacy, and they care to hang it on their living room walls or outside their porch. That's fine with me. I get it. I understand. I don't think that the flag of any loser nation should hang above the nation of winners. Hmm. The Union won. America did not allow the secession. We became the country we were supposed to become, and the Confederacy failed. And based on that failure, that flag should never hang over government building or municipality again, because it represents a time when a civil war happened and people wanted to secede from the Union, and it didn't work. It's that simple for me. You know, LeBron and the Cleveland Cavaliers can't wear a world champions t-shirt this summer. It just can't happen because they lost. Yeah. So, and that's how I look at
the
rebel
flag.
They
were probably printed somewhere, though.
Yeah, they're definitely, there's a kid probably wearing it in a third world country right now.
But it means something to me. Yeah. It's like, well, okay, you know.
Yeah, okay.
That's cool, but you're not going to hang it in the, you know, in the gymnasium.
But I'm glad, and most of the flags that have went up, like in Georgia, you know, this is the one we currently have is just a representation of the Confederate flag. You know, no one got fooled. But the Confederate battle flag that people are used to seeing in places like Mississippi, South Carolina, that's a much worse offense to me, because that flag in particular was the flag that says the Confederacy has not died. We've put on sheets. We ride at night. We put on black sheets. In the day, we call ourselves judges, police officer. That says the spirit of secession lives. And that's just simply not true, because you lost. And that's the way it is. A lot of those flags went up in the turbulent 60s when protest was about to give people their civil liberties, people that look like me, as a last ditch effort, you know, just to be pugnacious and just to be honoring and mean. A lot of those flags went up. Those flags weren't up during the antebellum period. Those flags weren't up in the 20s, 30s, and 40s because they knew better. And they went up in the 60s as a form of protest. So I'm glad to see those flags coming down. I hate that such a tragedy had to be the trigger for it to happen. Pardon that word trigger, but you know, I hate that tragedy served as though
the Civil War wasn't enough.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah. You know, but at least, you know, at least some good came out of it.
Let me ask you guys, you know, Mike, you're black. L, you're white. You grew
what?
Up being
what?
In love with hip hop.
What's going on here?
Being in love with hip hop as a teenager. I'm curious what kind of conversations about race you guys have together.
Huh.
Honest ones.
Really honest ones. We're very close as friends, you know?
Yeah.
So we don't really have, we listen, you know? I think that for us, our friendship is so easy that there's, and rooted in so many things, so many aspects of our personality and our history and the things that we love and the conversations we have. But it does come up. And it's important to come up because in a lot of ways we're very aware that even us having a public friendship and even us having a chemistry and making music that works is a powerful thing to some degree for people to see, especially in times of confusion and you know, strain.
I think everyone should have a friend of a different class, culture, or race. I think that will do a lot more to stop systemic racism and the perception of than anything else. I don't think you can. I think you can view people like, oh, they're cool as groups of people and don't bother them. But if you don't have a Muslim friend, you know, you're not as progressive as you think. If you're black, you don't have a white friend. If you're white, you don't have a black friend or an Asian friend. If you don't have
if you're straight, you don't have a gay friend.
Yeah. If you don't have someone from outside of your social circle of comfort, then you could be doing more. And it's just that simple. I encourage my children. They have different friends. I encourage adults, young people, because I think that actual growth comes out of human experiences with people versus looking at data or being a voyeur on the news saying, well, those people are good or bad. Either way, you're still a voyeur and you're out of that world. You should put yourself in the world of someone else so that your world grows.
I want to change tack slightly just because Marketplace, we do this thing where we do the numbers, which is partly the stock market, but we're kind of obsessed with numbers. So why did you guys title your albums? Like, why are we talking Run the Jewels 1, Run the Jewels 2? What's with the numbers as opposed to a fancy title?
It's pretty complicated. The first one was the first album. The second one was the second album. You'll probably need a computer for this. Are you in front of a computer?
For my part, I'm a huge Zeppelin fan, too. And I always love the fact that Zeppelin's first 3-4 records are just Zeppelin 1, 2, 3, and 4. You know,
it was absolutely. That's classic. And also was in a lot of ways, there was no pretense with these records. It was literally, we weren't even trying to sell it to you. It was literally like, so there was something about just cleansing ourselves of any type of pretense that really meant something to us for that project. Like it was just run. Well, first of all, the first one was just Run the Jewels. Yeah. So when it came time for the second one, it wasn't, you know, we couldn't, Run the Jewels, The Revenge. You know, you just get a little bored. You know, eventually your own, you know, pseudo creativity, it seems more interesting to not be creative. You know, we thought it was funny.
Yeah, and the focus is always the symbols and the album background. And I think that just calling it Run the Jewels 1, Run the Jewels 2, you focus on the art more. You focus on, you know, you don't get hung up trying to understand a title. I think that the whole package is just more palatable that way. Hmm. So Run the Jewels 3 will be next year.
This is also, this one's a little offbeat. You did this video feature that I love that's aimed at teenage girls called Ask a Grown Man for Rookie.
Yeah. I have a teenage girl. So it's.
Do you feel like you give her good advice?
Well, yeah. We were at daddy daughter dinner yesterday before I left, and we talked about nose rings, tattoos, marijuana, and college, you know. And, you know, mom won't let me get a nose ring yet. Why? Because she says I'm too young. I'm prone to agree with that. You need something to look forward to. My friend went and got a tattoo. Really? What'd dad tell you? You told me if I ever want a tattoo to come to you, it's going to be ugly like my older brother did when he snuck off and got one. Good. marijuana. I'm sure you've smoked, so I'm not going to ask you to, so you don't have to lie to me. But do you know the rules of smoking? Don't give smoke, you know, anything anybody's pre-rolled for you. If you're in the company of boys, let me read this article on Mr. Bill Cosby. And, we're not going to be just randomly smoking. She got it. And then we spent the rest of our time after that 10 minutes talking about colleges and, you know, she wants to teach and which colleges are going to be best for her. But I just, more than anything, try to keep the lines of communication open. I have two daughters, a 17-year-old and a 8-year-old, and both are pretty feisty young women, and they let me know their minds. So
I don't have any daughters, but I was raised in a family of women. I mean, I was raised by my mother and my two sisters. So it was important for me to do that because I have a great, I grew up, my heroes were women, the people in my family that looked after me and the people in my family that I felt protective over and felt protective over me were women.
All right. So my colleague Kai Rizdal does this thing where he asks people to describe their jobs in 5 words. What would you say your jobs are?
I don't work at all.
Trying to find sleep time.
Those are pretty good.
Giggling high with Killer Mike.
Making mad dough with LP. Rocking shows, spitting flows, gone.
Ooh, I think we have to end it there.
Respect.
Killer Mike, LP, thank you guys very much.
Our pleasure.
Love and respect. Thank you for having us.
Thanks for having us, guys.